Hello, and today at Uncle Data we have Brian Olson, who's currently head of developer relations at Tabular.
Yeah, so there we go.
the Reno hat as well. So
yeah,
let's talk about those. You know, give a short intro about yourself, your experience. Really interested.
Yeah, so I spent a little bit of time doing, you know, traditional data engineering work, although my title was always software engineer. I feel like it goes in and out depending on what you where you're coming from. So I'll call myself either one. But yeah, started out in the whole Hadoop hype cycle, getting out of school, and did a lot of that in my early research, throughout my master's and stuff like that. Then, so I was just very hardcore into data, did 4 years in a cybersecurity firm and got to do more of that. Was, dealing with all the problems of Hive and, the HDFS, MapReduce, just like ridiculousness. And so I thought Hive was really cool because it got us away from, building out all of the MapReduce, like very flaky MapReduce stuff, or at least minimized it. And then, we got to do stuff in kinda SQL. And then once we found out, Presto, which then later became Trino, it was, that was totally revolutionary. ANSI SQL, very standard SQL, and not, expected results, expected outcomes. And so so I started, getting really into Presto at the time. It was actually two Prestos at the time. It was Presto SQL and Presto DB. I just realized there was a lot of lacking documentation. I wanted to fill in videos, things like that. Started to get involved with the community, contributing some of the work that we were doing at my company at the time. And then, just brushed up against a lot of people that were there in the community, started loving it. And eventually, Starburst had reached out to me because I was getting more active in the community, getting more active on, LinkedIn, social media, and just kind of like, I just liked answering people's questions, right? And this kind of gets into the whole theme of today. I just, I had no idea anything about this topic of developer relations, about developer advocacy or anything, any of this stuff. And the CEO of Starburst reached out to me through LinkedIn, asked me if I wanted a job, and I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to do some like an engineering position in the back end. And he's like, well, actually, we could definitely do that, but what if you seem to be able to communicate this stuff pretty well? So let's try something else. And would you be interested in doing developer evangelism? And I was like, oh, developer evangelism, what is that? And I was, had a very religious sounding context to it. And so I looked it up, just kind of got some background on it. It had this kind of marketing stuff involved in it. It had some product stuff in it, and it's stuff I'd never done. So I was like, I don't know if I'm really qualified to do this, as well as like, I don't know if I like, we, and as engineers, we get our identities really mixed up into being engineers a lot of times. And so it was a hard transition in my head at first to think of like, I'm not going to be 100% of the time coding, developing, doing all the cool things that engineers get to do. But then I realized like, well, there's this other stuff I get to kind of play with when I get to go into the marketing side of the house, right? I get to start thinking through like working with people. I'm one of these like extroverted, I see a lot of stuff on social media and all these people calling themselves introverts. I'm like, why are you on social media then, like all the time talking to people? So, but anyways, so, but I'm admittedly very extroverted. I talk a lot, get really excited when I'm around people. So it just charges me up. And that was one of the things that I always like was a disconnect with the typical engineering culture, was like, I really enjoyed open source for the fact that I get to work on stuff that I enjoy with people that understand what I like. When I'm at home, nobody does tech. My wife's in medicine, my sister-in-law is an occupational therapist, my brother's a lawyer. So it's like, all these people that have no clue what's going on in tech and databases and data in general, right? So when I get to be around like fellow nerds and just totally geek out, it's like a fun kind of thing for me to do. And when you're full-time software engineer, you occasionally talk with your teammates, but not too much in depth. And in fact, you kind of try to stay, courtesy, stay away from work talk. You'll talk about other things. I just really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed that part of it. And so after all that stuff, you know, got the job offer, got the offer about the developer evangelist, started diving into what that was, and I liked it. I think I sort of was like, I'll give this a shot. And if I don't like it in, you know, like 6 months to a year, I just want to go back to being a software engineer, right? So that was how I would dip my toe in the water. And so they're like, great. So I started out working for the marketing team at Starburst, getting to do all this cool stuff with Trino, got to work directly with Martin, Dane, and David, who, you know, created Presto and Facebook back in the day, and then moved on to Presto SQL, then Trino. And yeah, and then, you know, now today I'm, so obviously Trino is a query engine, works with, well, I should say obviously, your listeners may or may not know, but, you know, working with a query engine that does querying operations on a data lakehouse, including, like, you know, Hive was the original. And now there's the three new formats, Hootie, Delta Lake, and then Iceberg, which is the one that I'm, that Tabular is based around. And so I got very close with that team there. Really liked the format, the philosophy behind the project, and just the way everything was set up. So I was just like, internally, while I was doing Trino, I had to be very unbiased, but I was like, internally, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is the one that I really like. And so, you know, I had talked to Ryan Blue, who's the creator of, one of the creators of Iceberg. He also wanted me to, you know, do what I did at Trino, but do it for Iceberg. And at first I was like, no, I love Trino. I love Trino. And then eventually he convinced me. it was a great, great decision too. Like, I still get to be around the Trino side. Still get to be in the ice. Now I get to be more involved in the Iceberg community and a little less involved in the Trino community, but you know, it's still like, I'm still part of both worlds. And I really, really like that. And I think these two technologies in tandem are something that gets me super excited. So that was a long intro, but yeah, that's, that's what I tend to do, is ramble on. So I'll stop right now.
Okay, so it's clearly visible, you know, that you're quite extroverted person. And when you're saying, you know, like, oh, you're introverted, you know, like, why are you on social media? So yeah, I tend to put myself as more of an introvert. But yeah. I know that I'm somewhere in the middle, because I like to geek out with certain on certain topics with certain people. So yeah. That's clearly, yeah.
So you're selectively introverted.
Yes. You know, when it's my excuse, you know, no, I'm introverted. I'm drained out. But in some cases, that's actually the case. Okay. Yeah. So basically, you know, what happened? You were a walking Stack Overflow on Starburst, right?
And now you kind of.
Well, yeah, and then you transitioned to now walking Stack Overflow for Trino as well on Iceberg. So
yep.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was and that's really where it came from, right? That's where a lot of this stuff is, like, you know, when you as an engineer, you know, I think most engineers have empathy for other engineers. Like, we want to write good documentation and help each other out and test things the right way. Like, I don't think anybody intentionally doesn't do that stuff or intentionally doesn't write docs or anything like that, right? It's like, it's just like not as interesting. And then you just don't think about the consequences. But then if you ask, like, any engineer, right? They're doing engineering because they think there's, like, you know, a grander effect to the work that they're doing, right? And so, so that's where it comes from, right? I think there's this, like, deep amount of empathy that we all have for each other, the work that we have to do, and it's very difficult. And I think that's where I was like, oh my gosh, there's no, yeah, I mean, there was docs, but there was just, like, so many missing gaps, and I was like, I need to start filling those in, and all this other stuff. So it just kind of came up naturally for me, like, and I did that in my own jobs, right? Internally, I would always, you know, kind of own the wiki or own the, you know, various docs going on internally, and I would always, like, For the engineers that struggled conveying what was going on inside the project, I wasn't the type that would just take their work and be like, this is mine. I very clearly would delineate, this was all their work. I'm just the one, like, kind of conveying it, right? So I was always naturally, you know, had this knack to kind of communicate what things were going on. And it was important, because if nobody else inside the company knew about this project, then, like, we were engineering for nothing, right? And it's the same thing, exact same thing in open source. Like, Trino, Presto was just revolutionary for me, going from Hive to Trino and that query engine jump. Same thing with when I went from the Hive table format, you know, or the bespoke table format doesn't actually exist. But then, you know, actually to a spec that everybody can follow, that's very, you know, community driven and all this stuff. That's, you know, both of these projects, when I found out about them, I was just like, it solved all the issues of late nights and diving through a whole bunch of Cloudera forums to figure out, okay, this is my version of Hive. That's this version on Hortonworks. Then I have to, you know what I mean? It's like you had to do so much extra work and you just relied on hopefully finding the right exact, you know, things like configurations to jiggle a little bit that somebody else tried and posted, thankfully, and then you fixed it, right? But I was like, you know, so much of your work, and it's like, it's not even engineering work, it's just boring. So
it's just googling, you know,
you're just googling, right? And that is a lot of engineering, but it's like, man, if the answers are just much more readily available, I think that was what bugged me. This is a great technology. People need to know about this. People need to know how to use this. I want to make this easier. And so I started. I mean, it just kind of naturally came up, right? So that's really where it was an accident. It was all an accident, and I just happened to come across it. So anyways, rambling again.
So did you find the Stack Overflow post, you know, like during those searches, right, where someone posts exactly the same error, and then, you know, like at yes. the comments he writes, oh, I got it.
Yep. I always love those ones where you find the Stack Overflow and then like they ask the question and then like 2 days later they're like, I found it, and they post the answer and they like check their own answer off and stuff. That's totally valid, right? It's like, as long as you're not just, you know, you didn't just know the answer automatically, but I think that's like one of the best things that I thought about like Stack Overflow is that's that empathy kind of bubbling up from the engineers, right? Joel, oh, I can't remember his last name, but Joel, is it? Oh, I can't, I'm not going to try to say his last name. But you know, him and the coding horror guy, you know what I mean? Jeff Atwood. So him and Jeff, right? Like they were just like, well, there's so many of these like similar problems that we all run into. Like, what if we just put this all onto one site that really fit the, you know, Google SEO model and just made sure everybody could find this stuff. And it's just been, I mean, that's that without that now, I don't know how development has probably gone so much faster just in the name of like having Stack Overflow available to us. It's probably just sped things up so much. So anyways, and now we're seeing, you know, this proliferation of not just the, you know, Stack Overflow, but now it's like people want things like customized, right? They want things to just, you know, I mean, you see this with AI, right? You see LLMs and stuff like that. You want to be able to see, have the whole history of everything that's been said about this product and all the documentation for it and any book that's been written on it all condensed into a very well-trained LLM model, and then ask it a question and then it can tell you exactly what it is. Obviously there's a lot of problems there still, but, you know, I really hope that one day, like, so, you know, DevRel came out of this need for specifically having somebody who knows different people in the community, who knows, you know, at least most of the, like a good chunk of the answers that they can get you started. Because the majority of people that are reaching out are people that want to get started. So when you look at like the people that are coming to me, they're all brand new and they're all asking the same questions. And what that tells me is I'm missing documentation. I'm missing a compelling enough tutorial. I'm missing making this answer very easy for them to find, right? And once I address that, I'll write a blog or I put something on like our forum that has like all of the, you know, all maybe like some permutation of this thing. So like we had the Trino community broadcast and we used to do a question of the episode kind of thing. So we would cover one of these like very common questions in there, and then that would go into the show notes so that if you Googled, right, that question, then it would take you to those show notes. And so any way that we could kind of think through like getting those common questions down, and then there's new common questions that come up after that, right? Once you've taken those down. And so so it's about always just, yeah, trying to lower that barrier of learning, the learning curve, and figuring out how to make that on-ramp a lot faster and especially to quickly understand the return on interest of, you know, hey, you get a quick hit of dopamine when you try out this very easy tutorial. This is like getting the larger context in your head, and then you move on and you're like, oh my gosh, now you're motivated to do something a little more complex, and I'll give you a tutorial that has a little more setup, a little bit of the stuff, but you know at that point, you trust, hey, I saw what it did with the simple thing, like the out of the box thing. I want to see what it does with when I start turning knobs, right? So
yeah. So you mentioned like a lot of things, right? You're doing, you know, like tutorials and these things, and like talking with people, managing community. What's your like composition of your roles in general? You mentioned a lot, right? So currently, right? What's the split between different, you know, occupational hats you have?
Yeah, it always depends kind of, you know, at Starburst, when I first started out, it was like purely get everybody to know about Trino and about, and you know, a little bit about Starburst. So awareness and marketing was definitely more of my hat when I first got there. And I was like, you know, I was actually kind of in, I you know, most engineers would have been like, oh, marketing. It was actually really interesting to see the issues and problems that marketing, like tech marketers, have to face, and start developing a little bit of empathy for their job as well. You know, as much as we get annoyed by marketers when you go on, like there's a Liam Neeson meme where it's like, you know, he's like, I don't know who you are, but you visited my website once, and now I'm going to keep hounding you with new ads and things like that, right? So like we all kind of get annoyed by marketers to some degree, but they're all doing the job because they believe in the product that they're talking about, and they want you to become aware of it and to hopefully solve your problem. You know, at least the good ones do. The other ones just want to make all sorts of money, and they're evil. But there's good ones. obviously
on the
engineers.
Side, right?
Yeah, this is on the marketing side.
No, on the
side.
Marketing this, side. Yeah, yeah. On my marketing side, I have a question then, you know. Since marketing is all about numbers and conversion, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Were there any metrics you tracked, right? How many people you brought, or, you know, how is the brand awareness?
Yeah, so this is the controversial subject. And as I, in the early days, I thought, well, my first opinion was, like in DevRel in general, the idea is that you shouldn't necessarily tie what you do to revenue, because that's going to affect the way that you engage with the community, and you'll be basically just like acting vendory, if that, for lack of a better word, right? You're going to be acting in interest, in pure interest of making the company money. The idea of DevRel, and DevRel is developer relations, right? It's about developing trust. It's about developing a relationship and making a mutually beneficial kind of bi-directional relationship between the company that employs me to help focus on the open source community, and then the, you know, the developers that are basically, effectively, it's about finding these positive sums between them. So what's something that, like, some valuable information or some valuable resource that we can give to you, but it's on a Starburst page, and you go to a Starburst page, you get that brand recognition for our company, but the tool is just, it's something that has to be paid for to keep up or something like that, and it's entirely free. If you look, or, you know, and free other than, like, you know, they'll track your API. So if you look at this computer back here, right, I don't know if you're actually, so do you actually use the video in any of the any of this, or do you just use the audio?
Yes, I will show the video as well.
Okay.
And this will not be cut out because we're doing these things.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So so I just showed my little computer behind me. If you're only hearing this through audio, and I, this is like, you know, so at first I was like running some, I wanted to, and I still have this project ongoing, but at some point it'll come out. But have you ever heard of like those SQL Fiddle, or like, you know, there's DB Fiddle, there's SQL Fiddle, there's also like, you know, there's a couple other ones. But, you know, since data, I'm sure everybody here has messed with one of these SQL Fiddle things where you define the schema on the left, you define the, and the table on the left, you define the, you know, build the data, sorry, as well on the left. And then you actually run the query on the right, and then the results come down on the bottom. I wanted to make this for Trino, and so, you know, I we were working at one point and this got pushed in the back, but this was something, one example of like what you could do. Build up one of those, you know, Trino, or like say Trino fiddle. That's what we're going to call it, Trino fiddle. And so if you have Trino fiddle, you get all that stuff. You can share it, share these little code snippets of SQL with your friends, and it's Trino SQL specifically, right? And so Trino is it's valuable on multiple fronts, right? It would be valuable from the fact that if you are using Trino, but also Trino itself is very closely tied to the ANSI spec, so it's like very a very clean version of SQL that you could share as well. So having something like that has to be hosted. That has to have all these resources, right? And stuff going on in the back end. And so, you know, I don't think most developers would care if they got this service to just share, you know, these little code problems and put it on Stack Overflow and linked all this kind of stuff. They would just put it there. And then if we just have a Starburst, you know, banner at the bottom, I don't think anybody's going to really care that much, right? It's like, that's the trade-off, right? You're trading the, you know, having to see the ad, but eventually kind of getting that association of that brand, because there's this philosophical effect called the mere exposure effect. As you see something enough times, after you hear a song enough times and all this kind of stuff, you slowly begin to like it. So if anybody was curious why people pay so much for advertisement. And so if that's at the bottom every time you use this tool, then slowly you're going to be like, you know, you'll have Starburst in the back of your mind when you're thinking about Trino, right? So that's the kind of like positive sum trade-off. We're giving you some resource, but in trade of, you know, you just basically seeing this ad, right? It's just like Google or any other kind of advertisement on the web. So that's the kind of games that you know, we as developer relations people want to play. We want to play games that are actually like, the thing is, like, we have a litmus test. We are developers ourselves, and we know what we actually care about and what's not. You know, marketers are like, let's do something very flashy, and they're going to love that, you know, when we do this, like, very, you know, cliche nerdy thing. And it's like, you know, you just know that that's like, there's some things that will do okay, you know, and it's like, you're not gonna like hurt anything if you do that, sure. And it does usually end up getting a little bit of buzz, but it's like, it's nowhere near as effective as just like creating a code repo where people can just like watch you do a small, simple version of this code and then dive into that repo themselves and start playing with things, right? So there's just like, you know, it's just this kind of gut feeling once you've been an engineer for a while of like stuff that it's like, you know, the golden rule, treat others how you would treat, you know, yourself. And it's like, market to others, you know, is kind of the developer rule. Market to developers how you would want to get, you know, marketed to. And so when you have this intuition, you can really help out the marketing teams not fall flat on their face in their developer focused marketing. And then you yourself, you know, it's so anyways, you asked about the, you know, connection there. To some degree, and when I first started, you know, of like the metrics, I was like, you know, marketing cares about marketing qualified leads, MQLs. That leads into sales qualified leads. And so this is all funnel, right? They model this as a funnel. And at the top of the funnel is marketing. At the bottom of the funnel is sales. And that's going to assume that some level of the marketing qualified leads are not going to follow through and become a customer. But then when you get the sales qualified lead, then that is where they actually convert into, from, you know, prospective into customer, right? So, yeah. Where DevRel falls into that, there's a couple ways that people have modeled this, but if you know, some places that are, or some companies that claim they have DevRel is just another layer of marketing on top, that they hire a developer, that developer's MQLs or KPIs or whatever, you know, sorry, MQLs, KPIs and full objectives like are tied back to the revenue. As soon as you make the goal of that DevRel team tied back to the revenue, and that's how you determine success for that team, then typically their actions become very driven around like, how do we get as many eyes as possible? How do we get as many people flowing through so that we improve the MQL, which eventually improves the SQL, right? That's, you know, the theory, and the most effective DevRel teams explicitly cut that revenue tie to the DevRel team away. And so what do you measure at that point? It just depends on so DevRel at that point. So you've cut off revenue. Well, then how do I know my DevRel team is doing a successful job? So, you know, It depends on what you care about, right? So sometimes it's content. So when I was starting out in marketing, I realized that quickly I had to cut the revenue part, and I made that plea to my marketing team, and they were like, okay, cool. But then they still had me like 20% of the time helping out like people that were tied to revenue. So you know, you were giving some technical advice internally, which is fine. And then like 80% of my time at that point was then trying to really like write blogs for Trino. I wrote a couple parodies of like very popular songs, and you know, on my guitar, and then I would just like sing, you know, nerdy tech songs. It's one of my things I enjoy doing anyways, and how I think it's a good way to kind of convey common silly things that go on in data engineering. So then, like, you know, doing a lot of that stuff, and over time though, it was like, it was always still this weird tension when I was in marketing of like, they wanted me to talk more about Starburst over time. And I was like, I mean, I understand like you want me to do that. And because we were getting to this point where we had a SaaS product, and the SaaS product was incredible. I mean, it was much more easy to like tell people, hey, try the SaaS product. You just got to basically go through a form wall, right? And then sign up for it. But it's that form wall that was like the real big barrier that I was like, I still don't think that this should fall under DevRel. This should be marketing and products kind of job. And again, there's no wrong or right answer. Some DevRel teams are specifically focused on internal stuff. If you look at Confluent, one of the most successful DevRel teams, like what they typically do is they talk about Kafka, and then they'll say, if you want to practice this really, really, the easiest way is to use the Confluent platform, right? And so that, I mean, and that's not wrong, you know, as long as you're just, I mean, every developer is aware that once you sign that in, then you're going to get some reach outs from the, you know, some stuff from the marketing team to join this meetup, do that, get more involved and whatnot. And then you're going to maybe get contacted by a salesperson when you do that, right? I think most, that's why they're very apprehensive about that, that step. And so for DevRel, what we're focusing on is I want to get people's trust and understand what the product's offering them before they make that first step of putting their name in the form and that kind of thing. And you could do that very easily in open source. It's basically the product before the Starburst product. And so the beauty of open source is that, you know, somebody can just pull everything down, no big brother or no marketing team kind of watching you, what you're doing. You can just, with full autonomy, make your own decisions about this and your own thoughts and understanding how it works with your data and all that kind of stuff, right? You develop all of your own thoughts before you get asked, you know, hey, come into a meeting, try this out. And it's this kind of low stakes, you know, I don't feel bad if I cut this person off kind of thing, like, you know, this salesperson off and say, no, I don't have time. You just want to kind of have your own autonomy to basically feel like, oh, okay, I do like this or I don't like this, right? And sometimes that when you're going straight into a proprietary software, that just doesn't feel always the best. And you also want to think about, well, is the open source enough for us as well, right? And so you may not even be ready at a point where, you know, you're having smaller use cases, or you're not having to worry so much about maintaining a larger cluster or anything like that, particularly in the database case. And so you want to, you know, you're perfectly fine starting out with just open source. And that should be perfectly, like, your DevRel team should be able to function having plenty of those people in the community. The way that it's commonly modeled, so you think of that cone again, that little,
funnel.
Filter. What's that? Funnel. Yeah, I could not think of, I said filter. Funnel. So you have that funnel. One thing I liked, so there's this software for developer relations people called Orbit. And so what Orbit does is it helps you basically keep track of activities and people that you run into in the community and that kind of stuff. And they have this really interesting model called the orbit model. So it's kind of a circle. And they modeled that circle on top of the funnel. And so what this circle is trying to do is not they called it like the ice cream cone model. So you know, the funnel is now an ice cream cone. The circle on top, the community, is the ice cream. And so, you know, what you want to do as a company is you want that ice cream to melt into the cone, but you can't guarantee that. And it should not be DevRel's job to guarantee that it falls in the cone, right? It should be marketing and sales job to make the cone bigger. And you can help them do that and pass the wider nets and stuff like that. But your job is simply grow and make more ice cream, because you're going to grow the probability that more ice cream will eventually melt into the cone. So that's really where it comes in. And so now we talk about the metrics of, okay, what do we say the DevRel team does? Well, what's the thing that you can do that will grow the community more? And what I found with engineers is that it's just show them how to use the dang software, make the documentation better, just figure out what is the problem, like what is the biggest problem that people are dealing with? What are the people complaining the most on Slack? What are people complaining the most about on, you know, Stack Overflow? What are the most common questions? And start addressing those. Start making sure that there's an easy way to find answers to that, and that there's an easy way to get started, and that there's all these different cool ways to understand the full context in various different use cases that you might have with that software. So that's really where, you know, the DevRel is trying to fill that gap. When you make your metrics, right, there's no guaranteed 100% way how to say what's right or wrong. And it's a very commonly debated thing. But assuming you at least have done the right thing of cutting off yourself from the revenue, and then, you know, at that point, when you've cut yourself off from the revenue metrics, your focus is growing the community metrics. Sometimes that might be some vanity metrics like GitHub stars or things like that. Those are a little shallow. What I like to see personally is engagement on the website, engagement with tools that we're making, like that the one I just told you about, the Trino Fiddle. Once we would have deployed that, which I'm still planning on doing, but we'll come out later. But, you know, ideally, you start seeing how many people are interested and engaged in this kind of thing. You could also make a forum or something like, you know, Discourse, which is actually Jeff Atwood's company now, the Stack Overflow guy. So, you know, he made a open source version basically of Stack Overflow, and you just run it for, you know, forums for your specific community. You know, if a company wanted to run that or another server, if you have a Slack channel, that helps for immediate communication, but then maybe like the company, a very common pattern I've seen, and this is with Confluent, Druid, a lot of the Apache projects do this, they'll pull up a discourse, and then they'll, you know, have some people start talking on there and get some seed stuff going in there. And then it's basically like a very customized Stack Overflow that's run by a company. At that point, the resource is the knowledge and the verification of answers, because, you know, you go on Stack Overflow, there is obviously the check mark, but we don't know if you're, you know what I mean? Like you don't have people to actually verify that this person actually got this answer right. It's much more likely you'll get a better answer from a, you know, with a whole bunch of people who are experts on the particular system, and they're incentivized to focus on that part of the community, not Stack Overflow, because then you'll come into that community and they'll understand, they'll have a lot more data and they'll have a lot more understanding of what your problems are, what they should be developing both in the open source to contribute back, or if it's something that's internal that wouldn't make sense in the open source that should be, you know, productized or you know, to basically make some money. So that's really where you start thinking in the KPIs and things like that. And then there's these other parts of like the job, which is PM type work. The most valuable thing I think that every, you know, open core company that's building on open source needs to get in their heads, especially, you know, all CEOs or anybody who happens to hear this, right, that's running a company on open source, like the biggest objective should always be figuring out how to get that set of features that's missing in the open source that people are asking for, and get it either immediately in the open source, or, you know, again, it could be something that is a differentiator that you could productize on. But those signals that come from the open source is literally what keeps the open source technology alive and the proprietary technology alive. The balance is very hard to play, because what you want to do is, you know, what happens with big companies like Terraform, like if you look at Terraform, right, that died out over time. There's these, they had almost the entire industry, and then they just disappeared. Not disappeared, but they're struggling these days compared to what they were before, right? So it's like, if you look at why they fell out, it's because open source just runs at this faster pace, and it's because people just voice what they want. And the feedback mechanisms there, and the community, and people just putting their own time, or, you know, some vendor or other very involved larger company like an Apple or a Netflix is there, and they're just like, they can just knock that setup out and get the testing right. Everybody verifies it and makes that new feature, you know, solid. And it just goes way faster than what you would have to do to get the same thing happening in a one company. And that company is also very only focused on a very small subset of the larger community, which is their customer base. So they're only going to focus on that. If you are an open core company and that's all you focus on, you are going to be like you're going to be like outdated super quick, and you're going to be hindering the open source project. So it's always these really interesting like product decisions that have to come around this of, I need to keep the open source compelling, more compelling than any competitor out there. Here are these features that we hear of from the open source community. So let's start developing some of these. And this one, you know, is like very obviously something that's easy to maintain in the open source. Let's put it out in the open source so that this is like an edge up over other open source opportunities, right? Because if you make your open source product crippleware, right, then that's actually going to shrink your ice cream super quick. It's just going to melt, and nothing's going to fall into that cone, right? It's going to evaporate and go into another cone somewhere. So that is the constant like back and forth figuring out on the product side, and constantly focusing on those signals that aren't your customers, right? And it's hard for vendors to do that sometime, because especially as the vendor grows, you know, there's just so many opposing voices, and, you know, all the salespeople want to back up their existing customers who are paying them a lot of money today. But if you do that, you're digging yourself into a big hole. And it's almost like technical debt. You're just, the more you do that, the worse off you are. So anyways, another rant.
but that's really on point, right? For me, if I can get like properly or like easily started with a tool, I'm already, yeah, you know, I don't really want to spend any more of my time, you know, trying something more complicated. And yep, even if I would try it, right, thinking then about going on the paid version, a paid tier, it doesn't even make sense, right? If I didn't like, yeah, it, you know, open one. So that's, yep, that's actually makes a lot of sense. Okay, yep. So like, as I understand, you're a multi-hat person, so with Trino at this moment, now on some side, and on the Tabular and Iceberg a bit later. Yeah. Like, so my then question, right, since you're doing a lot of different positions, different things now, yeah, how you structure your day, and how does your day to day in general look? Because it looks to me like you're just jumping from one thing to another, you know, like, yeah, like the talk we have, right? Like, sure, yeah, wow, it looks like, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah. So one thing I see very commonly in the developer relations thing, and it's you know, and this is something I got checked out right at the beginning when I was getting on this journey, but I have ADHD, so I'm like, my brain is all over the place anyways. And it seems to be a very common thing in this field that people who have ADHD tend to like gravitate towards this field. And I think it's not because we're good at context switching, it's just what we naturally do. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. Like, you have to, I've had to really become disciplined in tracking everything as close, like, you know, So a lot of my DevRel experiences, you'll be the only DevRel, or at least one and two. And so, you know, when you're on such a small team, it's hard to continue motivating yourself to, like, you know, do the issue board tracking, because issue board tracking used to be like, I have like a 20 person team. We definitely have to have this tracking stuff. And you have somebody in that team that just really owns that, or, you know, a couple people that are like, you know, your Kanban people. Right. But here it's like one or two of you, maybe, a max team of five, which is really good. But it gets really difficult to track that down. So, you know, definitely using a kind of Kanban board type thing. Like you, if you don't do that, you're just gonna, and this is true of software engineering too. Like software engineering, it's very easy to just be on Slack and immediately think that the most important thing that you should be working on right now is whatever just came up in your Slack form and seems somewhat important. In reality, like, there's a customer that's paying way more money than the problem that you're about to fix. And you should be working on that thing that you said you would be working on and get done by the end of that sprint, right? So that is something that I've, when I first started out in DevRel and I was by myself, I just had zero structure. I was just like learning all the things, just bouncing around. And sometimes that's good. Like sometimes I just, you know, with the ADHD and stuff like that, right? I remember, so we had this, this benchmarking is the first thing that came up to me. So benchmarking, for those that don't know, it's when you literally run a benchmark like TPC or something like that, and make sure that, you know, whatever settings that you're running yours on is the better settings compared to your competition, so that, you know, your stuff looks favorable, right? And you'll, you know, maybe identify those configurations, or maybe you'll just kind of breeze over that. Even if you identify it, it's really just people really just scan over and look at the results. And are we ever surprised about that? I don't know. Probably not, because it's always going to favor whoever's talking, right? So I got really annoyed by that. And one day I was supposed to be doing something else, got super distracted by this benchmark that came out trashing Presto. It was like all the variations of Presto at the time for their shiny thing. And I was just like, you can go back and find that. I have a blog on this whole thing. And so I started writing a blog, cause I was just, so anger writing a blog at first. And then I pushed that aside and cleaned it up. And then I was just like, you know, like the way I like to respond to these things, they're just so ridiculous. So I was like, I'm just going to do something like with my guitar playing skills and just call out how ridiculous this is. So I wrote this Justin Bieber cover, and redid the words to basically say, like, you know, let me see if I can think of the, it's for all the times you thought that you could beat our speeds with a benchmark that, with a benchmark that forgets TPC or something like that, like the TPC council, right? And so anyways, it's basically just a couple disses that I did to this thing, because it's like, what do we do? And like marketing was like, oh my gosh, we got to respond with our benchmark. And I was like, that does nothing. That just annoys developers, right? It doesn't do anything. What I'd rather do is just be like, benchmarks are so stupid when they come from vendors. And just, how about in the point of the song is like, you know, you can run those tests yourself. Like that's the kind of ending line. So idea is that, you know, trying to recommend to people like, hey, like don't just blindly trust these benchmarks that vendors are going to spit out at you. Like that's become part of the expected furniture when you go into a vendor website, that you see those things. And that's just like, everybody has to do that, but they don't do anything. They don't help you with anything. It's clearly a biased comparison. And same thing when our marketing team was about to go back with that, I was like, that's just going to annoy people. So then I ended up recording this whole song. I showed it to, the CMO, the chief marketing officer. She cracked up, loved it. And I cleaned up the blog, because my first portion of that blog was just angry. And then the second, like, I was like, I need to make it a little more professional. So I just, you know, calmed down a little bit. But then, yeah, so getting distracted sometimes, my whole point with that whole story getting distracted and kind of running into these little things actually ended up being some of the best work that I did, and really got us a lot of visibility and views. So sometimes I like to, you know, just let myself flow with the wind of ADHD. And then other times I'm like, okay, I need to actually get work done. And so then I'll go back to the board, try to make sure that something's going on. And, you know, for anybody out there that knows, you know, that it does have ADHD, they know you have to figure out ways to incentivize yourself to do things that you don't want to do, and it's a little harder, right? You don't have that executive functioning. So it's always about trying to structure that. But the great thing about this job, for, you know, particularly this disability, is like you have the freedom to kind of move around to different things. Software felt much more, it didn't jump around quite this much. And so in some ways it's almost feels like it could be worse for somebody with that condition. Could also be way better, just depending on how your ADHD affects you. And so everybody's is quite different. And so if I happen to be lucky where if I do, you know, I get excited about software and I get excited about writing code and stuff like that. So once I've done my tangent of like writing a parody about, you know, benchmarking, then I can get back to, you know, I get that out of my system, and then I'm just like ready to just go through and like code for 4 hours. So it's those kinds of things that are like, you try to structure your day in general, and that's always a challenge for me. I'm also on medication, so that also helps. But then, you know, the real thing that it comes down to is like going to the tried and true types of tools, always having a deadline. You know, one of the things that I always tell anybody who manages people with like ADHD, or particularly just a DevRel team in general, because there's never really like a hard deadline like there is in engineering. And if you don't have a hard deadline, then you just kind of like, oh yeah, that can be future me, no big deal. And until there's really a deadline. So if you look at like, I hosted this show called the Trina Community Broadcast. I was up until like 2 to 4 in the morning sometimes doing that show, good amount of times, like just crunching in all of the show notes and things that I had to do that night before, because it literally took me to that extreme of pressure to execute. And they end up going super well. Like those end up being some of the best ones. But it wasn't healthy, right? It wasn't good for my sleep and all that kind of stuff. So structuring your day is incredibly important, especially if you know, for those of you who do have, you know, a neurodivergent kind of disability, you have to be extra careful about, you know, just going to the wind and not getting anything valuable done. I mean, I think that's in general for the disability. But then when you get back to DevRel, it's so context switchy that even if you're neurotypical, you know, it's like you're still going to be having difficulties, just like anybody would, trying to figure out what's the right thing I should be doing. So I have a simple system where I just say, you know, and this is very similar to what a lot of engineering teams do. You assign a rough time, 1 to 5, you know, and you assign the priority. And then I have like basically a heuristic, which is now just multiply those two numbers. And then that comes with a way that I can rank and order those. And then when we review it, we just basically figure that out. So that's literally how, I mean, just like you would for engineering, that's how I run it nowadays for keeping, you know, planning out my day and figure out what I do next. And I follow it like 70% of the time. Other times then I just get on my little rabbit holes, and those end up being good things too, right? So anyways, it's hard. Yeah, it's not an easy thing. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the same in engineering too, right? So...
No, it's exactly the same, but the freestyling parts, you know, like sometimes leads to the, you know, the best features ever. So, yeah. Okay. So, since we're coming to an end, right, for me, it's like very interesting, you know, how did you, you know, decide, or like, you know, for how other people should know, you know, that actually developer advocate or, you know, these DevRel roles are actually for them. And, yeah. How should they, you know, like choose the company, right? If they have the role, you know, if the company fits them.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm extrovert, being an extrovert definitely helps, you know. Developer relations can be kind of split into 3 rough roles. Two of them are very much interacting with people. So that's the developer advocate, which is the newer word for developer evangelist. Community manager, which is the person that kind of does all the logistics. They're maybe a little less technical, but sometimes they're also technical. And they are more focused on, like, you know, making sure everybody's following the code of conduct, that nobody's, you know, being mean to each other and all that kind of stuff. And then just, you know, human router that helps them find the right person to talk to if they have questions, right? So that's community manager. Those people interact with people all the time. And so I'm more on the developer advocate side. Then, you know, if you visualize as a triangle, right, on the other side, it's developer experience. And so if you're somebody who is less extroverted and you're kind of, you know, but you're interested in stuff like, you know, you are interested in making sure that projects are successful and documentation is super important to you, then there's a developer experience side that's more about focusing on what's the experience of this developer when they go in and do the getting started tutorial. There's this metric, a fake metric, but it's kind of a fun metric to think about, called time to dopamine, TTDs. So ideally, you're lowering the time to dopamine on your docs, right? So that developer experience engineer is a little, you know, can be a little less out in front of people, but, you know, and so you'll get to be a little more behind the scenes if that's your preference. So I think there's kind of a spot for most people, but what I would say is, in general, like, the problems that you are interested in a lot of times, like, if you're this person that cater, like, make sure the wiki is perfect and you're making sure that communication's going well between teams, like, those are definitely good indicators that you would do well in DevRel. If you have a lot of empathy in general, just like having like an abundance of empathy and really wanting people to be successful and do their best. Like, if that's, you know, some people just have that and they want people to do their best, but it's not like they want it, you know? And so if you're one of those people that it's like, that's a big part of your personality and you want to enable people and that's what, like, gets you excited, that's another sign. If you don't like being on call, which that could be maybe most of people, but if you don't like being on call, or if you don't like kind of the mundane, like, you know, sometimes, you know, I felt when I was doing software engineering that the testing part, particularly, I always liked creating things, I always liked writing code, but the testing part was just, was brutal. And I know it was so important because, especially now that I found out in hindsight, ADHD, if I did not have those tests there, I would make so many mistakes and errors and stuff like that. So being that level of tedium really was difficult for me with my condition. But then even without that, like, everybody really gets nervous about when you push code to production once you're on call, getting something out there, right? And so that's tedium and that work was just a little, you know, once I stepped away from it, I was like, it was really heavy on me and just drained me so much. So now I get to still work on code, I get to still create things and do new things, but then I also get to mix it in with, like, human interaction and all these other things that I enjoy doing. And so if you find software engineering a bit mundane, you know, that might also be an interesting career choice to just check out, because you know, it's like, I find it mundane, but then it's also like, I love doing it when I get to do exactly what I want to do. And a lot of times when you're software engineering professionally, right, you don't get to do what you want to do. Okay, so your next question. So, you know, that'll give you some instance of, like, yeah, companies. So first and foremost, if you don't like the product, like, you need to make sure you're not just like the product, like, you freaking like the product, right? Or love the product if you want to go that far. And so, like, you got to be, like, behind that, because you're going to be advising people to use this thing, and you're an engineer who understands the intricacies of how this works, hopefully. And so, you know, you if you don't believe that this is actually helpful to people, and you're in this thing where you're saying, hey, use this thing, like I couldn't, there's a handful of projects that I could not work for because I hate the experience on there. I hate the way it works. And if I were, if I got out of a job and that was the only job left, I'd be like, well, I guess I got to go back to software engineering, right? It's like, you have to love the product to some degree of that you're talking about, because it changes the way that you think about it. It becomes kind of a fun obsession that you get to do. And part of your, like, I mean, I dressed up with this little Commander Bun Bun hat hat. Again, people aren't looking, it's a little bunny that's in a spacesuit. I dressed up in this hat, played guitar, did anything that I could to get people to pay attention so that I could just tell them how awesome Trino is, right? And so you have, when you go work for a company, like that's one thing is like the product, whether it's the open, specifically open source, but then even the closed source product, you have to love both of those. And if you're gonna work at a company, you have to be 100% on there. Then obviously like the typical things with any job, culture, make sure that, you know, that litmus test of like how they treat you and all this kind of stuff, right? If you have neurodivergent, something like that, or if you have another disability, right? How well do they take care of you? What's your time off like? What is the typical person working super late, or do they do death march? Is it too laid back? On the other hand, you know, sometimes there's like places that are just super lazy and you're like, no, I'm a little too high wired for this. So then, you know, you got to figure out if the culture is a fit, as with any job. And then the final thing, specifically in DevRel, is like there are DevRel teams, you know, that are created by companies because it exists solely for the fact of you want to have developer relations on the ballot of things that you have in that company, right? It's the same thing when big data started, right? Everybody was talking about how they have a Hadoop cluster and nobody was really using it. They were just storing a bunch of data in there. And I'm about to write a blog, by the way, on this. I'll send it with you, Thomas, to hopefully get published with this episode. But, you know, that talks specifically about this parallel that I saw with like big data. And now I'm seeing it with DevRel. Companies will adopt it, not knowing exactly what they want from it, not knowing if they need it. Excuse me. Let me get my thought back again. Cut this part out. they won't necessarily know exactly if they want it or anything like that, but what they try to do is like, okay, well, we'll get this DevRel team in here. They'll start out with things that we're familiar with, like marketing or like product or like, you know, and so they'll pin you in that role. And then you end up just becoming that an extension, you know, in marketing, you'd be a technical product marketer. And product, you would be basically just another PM that does a little bit of open source stuff, but then primarily focuses on the internal project. And if that's okay with you, like, by all means, like, you know, do that job. They're overpaying. I mean, in some cases, they'll be overpaying you to be a marketer. So, I mean, if you like marketing, then great. You know, that's a sweet gig for you. So then, you know, you just gotta figure out, you know, what my goal always with these companies, I am primarily concerned about growing the open source community. It's one of the benefits that I get for working in an open core community because I get to be a part of that something bigger in my head. And that's what gets me up, right? And so for somebody else, that might be totally different. But in my case, since I'm working and I'm advocating for the open source community, it's incredibly important to me that I know upfront that all of the C-suite people, all of the leaders that make decisions and stuff like that, really have an understanding that we need to cut the revenue model from the DevRel success model. And we're going to be focusing on this. Just asking those types of pointed questions, because I will tell you, it is impossible to change people's minds unless they saw the light somewhere else. It is much more likely to just, it's much better to just go into a place where the belief is already there in the open source community and that they'll help you out with that. And it's hard sometimes to parse that apart because of course everybody says, well, yeah, we love open source. We love that community. But you'll get to, once you've had a couple of these goes with these jobs, you'll know the telltale signs of like when they are and when they aren't. And I can't articulate it. I haven't thought about it, but there are just times where I'm like, yeah, this would be a good company. One great signal, and this is the signal that I really followed at with Tabular, is that, you know, the creator of Iceberg is also the CEO. And this is what you saw with Confluent and Kafka. You know, Jay Kreps was also the CEO of Confluent and yet also had that. And they had one of the best, most successful DevRel teams because, again, you just have to have this instinctual thing that the DevRel team doing the right by the community is the right way to go to grow out that larger marketing pool. And once those people there are there in the open source, it's just more likely that they'll end up converting over into customers over time, right? Because their use cases are going to grow. Eventually, they're not going to want to manage the stuff themselves, and then you're the obvious choice at that point, right? So that's yep. that's you know, how you can choose it. Just try to get some alignment and be very clear about what you want with your stakeholders. And if that is doing internal DevRel marketing for that product, that's also fine too. Like, there's also just DevRel people on like Snowflake, for instance. That's purely a proprietary project, right? So those DevRel people don't have this dichotomy of open source and company, right? So that's 100% what you would be doing at Snowflake if you're doing DevRel there, and that's fine. So I think my experience is much more nuanced with open source. So
that's fair, yeah. And last but not least question is actually about book recommendation. So what would you suggest, you know, for the listeners to read?
Yeah, so if you... Again, I need some water. So if you want to dive into developer relations, the very first book that I read and the person that I just follow all around is Mary Thingvall. So she's I think now head or VP or something of Camuda, which is a very DevRel focused company. I can't remember what they even make or anything like that, but she's there. She's like a kind of a celebrity, one of the celebrities in the DevRel space. So, you know, she wrote this book, The Business Value of Developer Relations. That gave me so much of this context, like stuff that we were talking about in this whole podcast. She goes into greater detail of like KPIs of all these other things, right? That's super, super valuable. And I think that's just, yeah, in general, like if you're wanting to learn about developer relations, that's definitely good. I really like this book. This one's not related to this stuff at all, but I figured since you didn't say it had to be related to this, Constellations of Philosophy by Alain Baton. This is basically just splitting a couple of the most famous philosophers and going with a little bit of the background of the story and their development of their philosophy and how to apply it to like general areas of your life. I think it's also just good to know these types of things, just if you are a community person, to apply that to, you know, like how you engage with people. Thinking about these types of things are also something that gets me excited. And that would also be a good indication if you're a big philosophy dork. maybe you might also be interested in open source and you know, because there's a lot of philosophy there, and in you know, particularly working with people to help them along their way in DevRel. The last one is Cognitive Surplus by Clay Shirky. So this one was kind of pretty well related. This was about like how when in the early days, you know, we would just work all the time and we didn't have any free time. Now we have kind of an inverse where we're getting so well with automating things and humans are becoming, you know, AI and all this stuff, right? Like we're getting to a point where humans have way more time to have this extra time to think. And so you do start to see things like open source popping up and people doing things like this on their free time, or more musicians and all that other stuff, right? So it's all about, you know, and then there's, you know, people playing video games, or there's people watching TV and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, what do you do with your cognitive surplus? And he actually doesn't say games are negative, if anybody thinks that was where that was going. TV, very much negative, because you're not interacting. Games, totally different. You have to do a lot of creative thinking, right? So he goes into some of these details about, well, how do we apply this cognitive surplus, and talks about communities that get built. And so this is more general theory behind community rather than specifically in tech related stuff. And again, it's thinking about, you know, how humans interact and all this kind of stuff, and how to think, you know, when you're thinking in the DevRel side, you're thinking of positive sums for the people that you're working, you know, that you're kind of helping out in the community and the company that you're working for. So trying to think, it's kind of like game theory. It's like, how do I align, you know, something really cool that this company can do, that this other person can do? And so that gets into general, just how do communities work? Because, you know, your company is part of that community, right? Starburst is part of the Trino community. Tabular is part of the Iceberg community. And how do we as an agent, as an entire company, how do people feel about us? How do we feel about them? How do we relate? And so that book gets into that a little bit more of like, more generally. I think he mostly focuses on people, but there's, you know, depending on how you know, abstract it, it could be people or companies or things, agents. So those are the ones I recommend. But I didn't go over too long.
Very nice. Your input and your experience here were super valuable. So thank you for your time. You spent a lot of talking and your mouth is probably super dry now. So
that's how it always is.
Thanks a lot for joining me for this podcast. And have a nice day.
Thanks a lot, Thomas, for having me.
Yeah.